Some question?
Yes. Yeah. Question from Gupta Govardhan. Please, could you give us meaning and any insight into Srila Sridhar Maharaj's words? Point on a line on a plane in a solid.
Well, at the time that the question that drew that answer was being asked, as happens from time to time, there's tension in the world, anxiety. After all, we're living in the world of mortality. And as much as anyone can become distracted or be in denial about that, inevitably, it is the inevitable problem of existence that everyone has to deal with. I've mentioned one of the premier atheists of the 21st century. But popular with atheists, agnostic, theists alike. The noble opposition, a good opponent, you could say. The end result will be sharpening your arguments. And before he passed away, he knew he was going to die within a year or so, suffering from cancer. And he's also a humorist. He said, you're always reading about stories of people who, in a similar situation to him, that they're fighting cancer or they're battling cancer. And then they lose the fight, the struggle, the battle. But he said, with a mildly humorous tone, he said, it's as if to say, after a long struggle with mortality, he finally succumbed. Because it doesn't matter what it is precisely, this is the overarching theme. It's mortality. So you think, would you say, after a long struggle with mortality, he finally succumbed? No, it's inevitable for everyone here and everything here. Not only what Guru Maharaj would call, the animation, meaning human, all living beings, but this world itself, we hear. It seems like every time I speak, now it's not doing it. So the whole world will vanish. Right? Sometimes people will think, it's these religious people, they're preoccupied with the end of the world. What is sometimes called millenarianism. The so-called millennia of that, the end of the world. It's very popular in certain Christian sects. But this is not that. Right? The scientist there's a consensus that there's an expiration date on the objective world or material existence, or at least as we know it. As we know in math, like you have something squared, then cubed, fourth power, fifth. So they will say, if you take 10 years, in some cases they say to the 12th power, it's a lot of years, but a finite amount of years nonetheless. Some will say to the 15th. Someone may argue for a different power, but they all give it a finite amount of time before this all dissolves and winds up. In the Gita, Krishna says, Bhutva, Bhutva, Praliyate. It's annihilated and destroyed, and then again it appears. And this is a cycle. By Vedic calculation, it's over 300 trillion years. Lifetime of Brahma. Day of Brahma, we know from Gita, Sahasra Yuga, Parjantam Ahuryat Brahmano Vidu. 1,000 Yuga cycles. The Satya, Dwarpara, Treta, Kali, 1,000 of those, and they last, 4,300,000 years? So it becomes 4,300,000,000 years, twice 8,600,000,000 years, and you go on and on, a month, approximately 100 such years, it's over 300 trillion years. But it's a termination date. It's a finite amount of time. It's relative. We know the seasons are changing here. I was recalling today that as we get a different group, it seems, of insects, birds, animation from at different times of the year. So we remember as the rainy season's concluding, in the beginning we have that period where there are those insects that only live like one night or at most a few days, when there would be, if we turn these lights on, there would be hundreds of thousands of them here, and then they go. That's their life cycle, their lifespan. So it's relative, the lifespan of that, the lifespan of Brahma. And the Brahma Sangita is a nice poetic comparison. Indragop, which is a type of germ, you see? Indragop and Indra, from the Indragop to Indra. So different concepts of what is a lifetime, what is a long period of time, what is a short period of time. But anyway, the dissolution of the world. And it won't be any solace to the people, places, and things in the world if you say, well, no, even the scientists say it'll be in some sort of, primal energy sort of thing that has the potential to manifest again. That's not inspiring. And it's consistent with the idea, all of this will vanish. All the things we know, that we revere, or we think are important, or we hold some ambitions for. We think of the great cities of the world, or the great dynasties of the world. What do they always talk about in China? Ming Dynasty. They'll say, this teacup is from the Ming Dynasty. Not to throw. Not like the one devotee did in Vrindavan. The Chinese gave him a little cup of tea and he went, no, it's Ming Dynasty. Paramananda was teasing, it was something really valuable. But so different dynasties, civilizations. I remember seeing the book. My eldest brother belonged to some book club, and the books of the day that were in vogue that you should have would show up on the bookshelf. The rise and fall of Western civilization, or the decline of the different books. But it would be like that Western civilization. I naively asked, and when I received the course offerings and a catalog, Western Civilization 101, 202, 3. I said, and what about Eastern Civilization? There wasn't a course on Eastern civilization. Only Western civilization, the Greeks. Right? What are those places called? The Parthenon, the Acropolis, right? Have I got the right country? Okay. The birth of democracy. So the Holy Roman Empire, the Roman Empire, the Hittite Empire. I joked with Madhupriya. Yeah, Madhupriya. Because she's from Greece, right, originally. And I was telling someone, her ancestors fought in the Peloponnesian War. Just mildly humorous. And later she came and told me, goes, my ancestors did fight in the Peloponnesian War. My point was, unless you just took a class on history, or you're a historian or a history buff, you probably don't remember much about the Peloponnesian War. And the Hittites, and the this, and the that. And every part of the world has some version of this. Right? So, and interestingly, when Sanatan Goswami Prabhu is in jail, we're told he gets a letter from Rupa Goswami. And very beautiful sloka. Srila Gurudev used to quote it sometimes. I haven't committed it to memory. But what it's saying in essence is, say, where is the Raghu Vangsha? What to speak of, you know, the Roman Empire and the Greek and all that. Where is the Raghu Vangsha of Ramachandra? Where is the Yadu Vangsha? Where have they gone? And the point being saying, this is the nature of this world. The Raghu Vangsha of Ramachandra appeared here for some time and prakat aprakat went into the unmanifested world. Same thing with the Yadu Vangsha and Krishna. Krishna appears once in the day of Brahma, Mahaprabhu, and Radha Bhava, Duti Subalita, Mahaprabhu, Nomi Krishna's Rupam. He appears Kali Yuga after that. They've also vanished from our eyes. So the question that was being asked to Srila Guru Maharaj was about nuclear war and the fear that if there's a nuclear war, the possibility that everything would be destroyed. Not just one or two countries, but the earth, all life, that kind of thing. The so-called nuclear winter, there are many things it's not necessary to go into. So at that particular time, some people were worried about that. As I say, at different times, there are lesser or greater amounts of tension on that kind of level. So that's what they were asking Guru Maharaj. What would be his response to that? And he said, it is a point on a line and a plane and a solid. And first of all, we should say a line being defined as an infinite number of points. So he's saying, in an infinite number of points, this is one point. So many before it, so many after it. What is a plane? So many, an infinite number of lines make a plane. An infinite number of planes, a solid. So he was saying, in the broad view of history within the realm of time and space, It's just another event, like so many other events before it, and so many events that will follow it. So don't, being filled with anxiety about your local relative situation, what should that do? You should take shelter of the Nirguna world, which is not affected by the comings and goings of this world and this plane. Saying, try and take your stand in the world of your faith. Right? Shraddha mayoyam loka. Sometimes the spiritual world is thus described. Right? So that was the point that he's making. And saying this, what to speak of this war, so many wars are going on. And he's saying, and the whole world will vanish, as we say. Even the scientists are in consensus. At some point it will vanish. Even, you know, the great Stephen Hawking says, what does he, of that time, he's giving human civilization 1,000 years. That's even a more bleak prospect. So, what does it say in the Bhagavad Gita? Anityam, nityam apihadira. I forget the sloka. It was saying that human life, labdva sudulabham bahu sambhavante, it's rarely achieved. We know that whether from a biological point of view or Jalajanavalakani Stavarlaka Vingshati, the Padma Purana saying so many aquatics, so many trees and plants, insects, birds, beasts, animals, at last human beings. So it's something that's very rarely achieved, and it's temporary, like other life forms. Right? Like those insects that live for a night, human beings, they also have a lifespan. You can see the statistics online, Google. You can look into your, those who are similar to you, and get some projected lifespan. It's also limited. So in that time that you have, how should you, where should you dedicate your energy? How should you spend your time? Prahlad reminds us that so much time, you know, in childhood play, bodily functions and necessities, sleeping, some occupational duty, saying you have a relatively limited amount of time for spiritual culture, internal cultivation. So be aware of that and spend your time wisely. And Guru Maharaj is saying, don't become distracted by any particular world situation or circumstance, to the degree that it makes you forgetful of spiritual culture and the pursuit of Krishna consciousness. So pursue Krishna consciousness under all circumstances, and you'll be gifted with something that is substantial and remains when this world vanishes. That is his point. Yes.
Second question.
Any other question?
Yes. Second question is from Alexei, Russia. Why don't we remember our previous lives? Probably it could help us to realize our present position.
(clears throat) Sanskar means mental impressions. And in a general way, we are carrying mental impressions from our sojourn in material existence. But when the body is finished, everything with that is also finished. It doesn't make us any less culpable for what we may have done at that time. Just like if someone were, woke up in jail and said, "What am I doing here?" And the police said, "You're in a highly intoxicated state, and in that state, you broke the following laws, or this many people died from your actions." I said, "Well, I don't remember that. So can I go?" They're saying, "No, it doesn't matter that you don't remember it. This is what you did. We have a record of this." So it's something like that, karmana, deva netrena, the material nature is keeping a record in a sense. And the situation we find ourselves in at present is based upon our past performance. Why this mother and father, this time and place, this gender, this nationality, geographic location, all of these things are not happenstance, but under the laws of material nature. But Srila Jiva Goswami says that, if you read in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes in the womb of the mother, that soul has some conscious awareness of their past lives. In fact, past 100 lives. And on the basis of that, they begin to pray, realize how much time they're wasting, repentant for that, and praying to the Lord that if you get me out of this predicament I'm in at present, being in the womb of the mother is not a comfortable situation, that I'll dedicate myself to you, to your devotees, to your, like this, makes an apparently earnest prayer. And then it says, but then the life force comes, pushes the baby out of the mother, and the trauma of birth causes forgetfulness. It's a traumatic experience. The birth trauma causes forgetfulness, and then the baby awakens and is, what did he used to say, the cynosure of all eyes, the center of all attention, and everyone's running around and cheering and happy. And as Prabhupada said, I think it was in the Anadi Karmapale song, he said that the baby's thinking, "This is the life." Everyone telling you how wonderful you are. They're only smiling. They do everything. You have so many servants. You're the center of everything. You think, this is the life. So we could say the trauma of birth coupled with other things. But on a subtle level, something is being carried life to life. Sangskar. Mental impressions, what Guru Maharaj refers to as acquired prejudices, acquired tendencies. So we see that even in a child, soon after they're born, the parents and others start observing their characteristics. And as they grow a little more, you start seeing mentality, tendency, all of these things. And they're not, it's just not the influence of the environment. There are those two schools in psychology, what do you call it, behavioralists and otherwise, where one group is saying, you know, it's what, nurture and nature, you know, it's the environment and how you're treated. That's how your personality forms. The others say, no, already you have a certain personality. And I think it would be safe to say it's a combination of the two. That someone, they have individual tendencies, a personality, ego, and everything that goes with it. And it gradually begins to express itself. And yes, there are environmental factors in how it will be expressed. But Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bhej. Wandering the length and breadth of the universe is the world of misconception. It's not just a geographical description, but we can understand it saying, going through all these different life forms and the possibility of so many varieties of circumstances. Bhagyavan Jeev, fortunate souls, come in connection with Krishna's agent, Guru, Guru and Vaishnav, and they get the seed of devotion, Bhakti Lata Bij. And the word I was searching for the other day was seedling. That's what's in the nursery, right? Or the seedlings. Right? A little seed, they need to be in a very, just like that child needs an extreme amount of care in the beginning and to be in a very controlled and favorable environment so that they can grow those seedlings, same thing in the hothouse, the greenhouse, very careful, controlled environment. And when they grow after some time and they start rooting, then they can be put in the soil of the regular environment and stand on their own. Yes.
Being on parikrama in the holy places brings some enlightenment. How to keep that small light inside after coming back home?
Sravanam, kirtanam, smaranam. Smaranam means remembrance. But not willful or by force. Guru Maharaj likes to quote this line from the Bhaktivinod Tagore song. It begins, Bichakshana. Korite, something, I forget the rest. But Bhaktivinoda says, if the Lord reveals himself, it's like lightning, a momentary flash, just as with the momentary flash of lightning and darkness, suddenly everything is revealed. And then it goes back. He said, so if I try and that's Krishna revealing himself to you. If you try and hold on to that, to force that, vanishes. Still, the remembrance of that may give some impetus to faithfully hear, chant, serve. We're reminded Romantic poets in England, primarily, they're famous for their songs about nature. They would go into nature, have some experience there, but write about that in London. So one of the, and they wrote about poetry and that experience. And what did one of them say? Perhaps Wordsworth or someone that, about powerful emotions recollected in tranquility. So when they were back in London, they're recalling the daffodils and the beautiful things they saw in nature. And the and London is a totally opposite environment. But within that environment, by recalling that, we can say, I'm just giving a mundane example, comparison, that it was giving them some internal joy, the remembrance of that. So it's something similar to that, that Guru Maharaj says, the Dham is like the capital of a country in the sense that the capital of a country, the country is like more present there. It has some special capacity and conveys with greater magnitude and intensity to the visitors what the country means as a whole, or that national identity. It's something like that. So by going there, the devotees, they become more aware of their aspiration, that as aspiring servitors, what it is they aspire to, and the reality of the Lord, his devotees, and their divine pastimes. I remember when I first went to Vrindavan in December of 1973, that somehow seeing the place of the Goswamis, and by extension, their paraphernalia, it made them more real to me in some way. Just as in a mundane parallel, when they show some famous person who lived before, and they show, this is their paraphernalia. And then you think, wow, they're not myth or legend. They actually lived and walked and, you know, breathed. And we go, this is the prasadam room of the Goswamis, the six Goswamis. And you think, oh, they would take prasadam here. Or here's Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir, his samadhi, the deities of Jiva Goswami. And it, thoughtful consideration of these things makes us feel more connected. And, but from time to time, that remembrance may come to us. We cannot force that. There's no step and repeat process that guarantees a spiritual outcome. What is the famous Upanishad? Tashyaisha Atma Vibhrinute Tena Labhyas, Tashyaisha Atma Vibhrinute Labhyas. Atma Tanum Swam Vibhrinute Tena Labhyas. He reveals himself to whom he chooses, through whom he chooses, and at the time he chooses. Dhamna svena siddha narasta kuakam satyam. That is Krishna. It's non-different than Krishna himself, and this is Krishna's way. So, may come to us, may not come. We cannot demand that. But if we're faithful, servitors, aspiring servitors, then from time to time some remembrance may come. Every day we're reading Chaitanya Charitamritam or hearing the Bhagavatam, and then some place may be mentioned, and then we'll, oh, we had the good fortune to go there. And some remembrance may come. And what I find even more interesting in the case of Srila Gurudev, Srila Govinda Maharaj, that he expressed some special affinity for Ucha Gaon and Lalita Bar, the house of Lalita Sakhi, her place. And he did not want to return there because he feared that that impression that came to him the first time, that a second visit or another visit might alter that, or it might, so he was content to remain forever lost in that sort of divine remembrance. That's also there. Yes.
Rupa Vilas Prabhu from Philippines. Why Srila...
And also I think of Mahaprabhu, like for the devotees who were fortunate enough to go to Puri. It's very interesting. It's described as Brahm, which means mistake, to mistake one thing for another. When he sees a sand dune, on one level you could say it's reminding him on Govardhan, on another level he sees it as Govardhan, he's running. The ocean reminds him of the Jamuna, and again, not just that, he's diving in to that plane. Right. Shows how intent, it's not smart, when we say smaranam, we're not talking about mental substance, actually. I gave some examples, they're just crude examples. Smaranam proper is seva, which means it's chinmoy. So what is not possible from that sort of divine remembrance? As when we read Chaitanya Charitamritam, if we read in the Bedanam Kirtan pastimes or Ratyatra, we're not reading about something that happened 500 years ago. That's not what is being described. It's real time, live streaming reality. And by the grace of Kaviraj Goswami and the Guru Varga, the faithful reader can enter into that. That is what is extraordinary. It's something living and dynamic according to the capacity of the aspiring servitor. Like Guru Maharaj said that, said like when you offer a flower into the Ganga, Jamuna, it enters that current and then it's carried away from you, and in time it goes out of sight. He said, but if you can move at the same speed of that current, then it remains in view. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur comes to mind. He's in real time, live streaming, experiencing divine pastimes. He's in that current. And for those in that current, they can remain in that current. But he himself is cautioning, oh, but if you try to force that, it's one thing to be carried away by that. Adhoksaja, adha aksaja. It's suppressing mundane experience. It means it's suppressing mundane remembrance. It's not that. That you can do. You, as people do, they show, here are the pictures. And here, and that a travel log. It's not a travel log. And the higher devotees know this, so they know it's whatever Krishna wills. If by his sweet will he allows for this to descend, that's adhoksaja. Descends from the higher realm into this plane. and suppresses mundane hearing, seeing, all mundane sensual experience, and gives what? A genuine, superior, spiritual sensual experience that has all these elements, nama, rupa, gunalila, sound, form, qualities, pastimes. Yes.
Question from Rupa Vilas Prabhu from Philippines. Why Srila Guru Maharaj addressed Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur as Bhagavan? What is the proper conception of this?
Well, I'll explain this in this way, that Srila Gurudev, Srila Govinda Maharaj, observed that His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is known worldwide as Prabhupada. Within the Gaudiya Math, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is known as Prabhupada. So there was some contention from Gaudiya Math members when A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami became known and addressed by his disciples as Prabhupada. Guru Maharaj mentioned one God brother before had taken that title for a while and had to leave it due to intense opposition from his God brothers. Guru Maharaj said, he left it after. But in the case of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, not only did his disciples call him Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada, but he became known as Prabhupada all over the world. So in time, first Saraswati Thakur was known as Prabhupada, but that's within Gaudiya Math and those in connection with Gaudiya Math. But A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, he became known as Prabhupada all over the outside of India and all over the world. And Gurudev would experience this as he would travel around the world. He might be saying Prabhupada, referring to Saraswati Thakur, but someone else meant A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, this kind of thing. And also, Guru Maharaj, when he was asked about this, he said, you know, we were reserving that for our Guru Maharaj, but it's not inappropriate for the disciples to address Guru in that way. But he mentioned at the time, just for some perspective, he said, Vishnupad is a higher title than Prabhupada. And I go, Om Vishnupad, that's general, you know, that is there. But you have to know something about the Gaudiya culture and Prabhupada. We don't need to go into all the details, but it was a term, we could say, that was being used, maybe implied by some, that if your guru wasn't addressed in this way, you might be something lesser than those who were favored by actually Jata Goshai. So Saraswati Thakur being addressed in this way was a message, not anything less, actually something more. And what's interesting is that group, whom we loosely or generally call Sahajiyas, there are many different varieties of Sahajiya Sampradaya, but they don't like Saraswati Thakur addressed his disciples, male disciples, as Prabhu. They don't like this. They say, no, Prabhu means guru. Only guru can be called guru. And, you know, we have like Mahaprabhu, Advaita Prabhu, Nityananda Prabhu. So they don't like that. But this shows something of the divine vision of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that he's addressing his disciples as Prabhu, which means, as we had heard all along from Srila Prabhupada, Swami Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, Gurudev, the Mahabhagavata Guru doesn't see anyone as disciple, but everyone as an extension of his Guru Maharaj. So Saraswati, Dashoshmi, I'm your servant, calling Prabhu to remember. He's not thinking of himself in the master position. He's thinking, they are Prabhu. They are Lord. They are Master. I'm their servant. What extraordinary vision he has. And this is a culture he created in Gaudiya Math and its descendants to address as Prabhu. So Srila Gurudev, seeing that and having special insight into the heart of Srila Guru Maharaj, he and the way his internal ontological thought processes work, he's scanning the scriptures, sees Bhagavan Badarayana, Bhagavan Badarayani, Bhagavan Narada. There's even a place where it says Bhagavan Drona. And as we heard from Prabhupada and his Gita purports, sometimes a very extraordinary, powerful personality is addressed as Bhagavan. We know Sri Bhagavan Uvacha indicates Krishna's divinity. But Bhagavan is used for Vedavyas, for Sukadev, for Narada, and for others. Right? So Srila Gurudev, he wanted to address Srila Saraswati Thakur in a way that was unique, since Swami Maharaj became known worldwide as Prabhupada. So he began saying, Bhagavan Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. But there were some who they thought, this is audacious, this is unprecedented, maybe it's inappropriate. Different perspective. So someone reporting such thing to him and also calling into question his judgment, and implying that Guru Maharaj wouldn't approve. So Srila Gurudev, he has all the books of Srila Guru Maharaj, Guru Maharaj's personal books. So he pulled out the Srimad Bhagavatam, and you can see in certain places Guru Maharaj has what is called marginalia. He's made some notes in his own hand. So in one part of the book, in Guru Maharaj's own handwriting, it says, Bhagavan Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Srila Gurudev was saying, if you question you who may be a disciple of Guru Maharaj, if you question my judgment on this matter, or think that this is something not approved by Srila Guru Maharaj, then in his own hand, Bhagavan Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Does that answer the question?
Bhakti is from Radharani, and faith in her halo. Then what about the pride and anger? Where do they originate from in spiritual world?
Just for clarification, Srila Guru Maharaj said, faith is the halo of Radharani. We need to be precise here. And the implication being that, you know, illumination, she's illuminating Krishna conception. In that sense, revealing Krishna conception. It's very beautifully expressed by Guru Maharaj. And the his explanation of the first sloka of the Brahma Stuti. Nomi jate brava puse abra vapuse taridambaraya gunjavatanksha paripichalasamukhaya. He's saying abra bapu means like ganashyam, like the dark cloud, it's difficult to see. This is a sounds like something very simple to say, but it's very profound to say. Krishna is difficult to see, like literally, metaphorically, in every way imaginable. And we should go, I've noticed that. He's difficult to see. Thank you. And we can say, oh, because of that Ganashyam, blackish cloud, like the monsoon rain cloud, and then what about monsoon rain cloud at night? And so many considerations may be there. Black is the color of Madhura Rasa. And, when it says, Nomi Jade Abra Vapuse, this is what, because Brahma's trying to say, like, what happened to me? How come I couldn't see you? That's what he's, why he begins this way. He's saying, how come I couldn't recognize who you are? Taridambaraya. He's saying, so Narayan is easy to understand as divinity. Lakshmi Narayan and four arms and majesty, Aishwarya of Vaikuntha. Same, but that, and I understand what Yajna Bhuk means, that he is the enjoyer of the sacrificial offerings. So whatever you give, there must be some yajna, and then by that, that's how the Lord eats. Yajna Bhuk. One of the things. Yagyeshwar, different names with Yagya in them. He said, but that Yagyeshwar, who is Yagya Bhuk, would be not with four arms, but as a two-armed human-like child sitting on the Jamuna Pulini, the sands of the Jamuna River, the riverbank, surrounded by other children, little cowherd boys with their calves, and that they would be picnicking and frolicking and joking. How you should eat, like right hand, and not he's holding food in his left hand and eating like this, and has a stick for guiding the cows and calves, and his bamboo flute, and he's laughing and taking his food at lunch, and the boys are playing. It's as if to say, forgive me that I couldn't understand this. It's not so easy. The human-like pastimes, deceptively simple, that the central conception of the infinite would, in a sense, conceal himself in this way. Because it's not what would be expected, or how one would calculate the position of divinity. But that's all foolishness. Like the William Blake pictures, the mystic poet William Blake, we get this saying that if the doors of perception were cleansed, They would see everything as it is, infinite. He did a series of drawings, and one of them, there's a person underwater in the ocean called Ureason. And he has some sort of a compass, and he's trying to measure the universe. It's an image that implies the ludicrousness of this of the finite trying to measure the infinite. So he's saying the stereotype of how I might conceive divinity. You contradict that. So it's how to really understand who you are. I can't do it, even with my four heads. But it's Tadi Dambaraya. Gurumaharaj says, but you who are Abravapu have that Ghanasham-like, cloud-like black beauty that's difficult to ascertain. You're covered with you wear the lightning yellow dhoti. That's tadit. Tadit ambar. Like dressed in lightning. Lightning dress. Dressed in lightning. And Guru Maharaj says, this is a reference to Ladini Shakti, to Srimati Radharani. And we can say in a poetic way, when dressed in his potency, that contrast reveals Krishna. That's how. So faith is the halo of Radharani. She is revealing Krishna in that way. And what was the question?
What about the pride and anger?
Oh, and about pride and anger. So the pride and anger of this world are all based on false ego. And misreading. Remember, when on Mahatma Gandhi Road, the tailawalas. There's rickshaw wala, but tailawala is where it's a bamboo ladder that's on two wheels, and they load 12 Elmiras on it, and there's two men carrying them up the Mahatma Gandhi Road. It used to be a nightmare fantasy I had that I would have to, when I was collecting there, that I would have to again be born in Bengal, and I would always plead with Krishna not to make me a tailawala. Because I'd see them at rush hour, because Mahatma Gandhi Road, it's steep at one point, and they would be sweating, and they're in their gumshas, one gumsha here, another one on the shoulder, and struggling to pull that thing. But Prabhupada said, and we'd see always, the man in the car, he would be yelling, hey, Tela, get out of the way. And the Tela would address the auto, whatever, They're calling each other by the vehicles that they were driving. This was his point. That's how they were referring, like you said, the driver would say, Padmini. When I was in Padmini, they did this to me. Now I'm, So Prabhupada's making the point. They're referring to one another on the basis of Yantra Rudrani Mayaya, Brahmayan Sarvabhutani. It's in the Bhagavad Gita. Seated as on machines made of material energy. So whatever's accompanying that ahankar, the false ego that goes with that, pride, anger, etc. Vacho vegam, manasakrodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaropitsa vegam, etc. That's right. That we are to withdraw from, and param drishtva nivartate, subdue through Krishna culture. Right? Superior experience. Icha dvesha samutvena dvandva mohena bharata. And Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, these dualities, icha, dvesha, mohan, this sort of illusion, what Prabhupada renders it as desire and hatred. Bhayandatiya vinibeshita cha disharape paitas viparyayoshmati. Turning our backs on Krishna, forgetful of our actual relationship with him, we're say competitors, establishing ourselves as absolute centers, trying to extend the circumference of our exploiting capacity. Narottam Thakur, in one of his songs, is saying how even these things can be somehow dovetailed, as you can say, Hanuman's anger at the abduction of Sita and his entering Lanka to try and rescue her. He sets the city on fire. There's that sort of idea. But to come full circle in this question, we hear in the introductory section of the Chaitanya Charitamritam that Krishna, he's saying, for those who are in the know, right, who understand something about divinity and Vaishnavism and the gradations of reality of Lakshmi Narayan, Sitaram, Dwarkanath, Krishna, Mathura, Vrindavan, etc. He says that those who their natural love and affection is constrained by being aware or overly aware, aisvarjigyan, of the majestic aspect of divinity, leaves him disappointed. See, it's beneficial for them. And God is great, and so many things, and master servant, dasya rasa, shanta dasya. He's saying, but sakya rasa catches my attention. That when someone is treating me as an equal, the finite is treating the infinite as an equal, and not out of some insane, bizarre arrogance, but love and affection. The love and affection has reached such a level as to consider him their own, an equal, a friend. This is heart melting to Krishna. And think about it, this is the ultimate loving sort of transaction. That the finite could actually reach that point to deal with the infinite as a friend. We sometimes take these things for granted. But it's mentioned in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Itam Sattam Brahmasu Kanubhutya Dasam Gatanam Paradaivatena Mayasvitanam Naradarikena Sakam Bijahru Krita Punya Punya. Like Brahma, saying, like, if you understand the Aprakrita Leela of Krishna, then you have to think, who were these cowherd boys that are with him, playing with him, that they can do this? They can play with God as a friend. So he's saying that is extraordinary. And as I've told, it's a wonderful thing that Garuda carries the Lord on his shoulders, right? You see, when Dwarka Krishna gets the Parijata from Indra, you see, riding on the shoulders of Garuda, how ecstatic Garuda must be to feel the weight of the Lord on his shoulders, and with his queen, he's serving as his carrier. How inconceivably wonderful that is, in such a beautiful divine image. But here, Krishna says, in playing with my friends, the play of these boys, that those who are defeated in their game have to carry the victors on their shoulders. We're told devotion is where the infinite comes under the control of the finite. The infinite is defeated by the finite. I think, being defeated by them, then I have to carry the devotee on my shoulders. You think, you can't imagine how much happiness this brings to my heart. Krishna's becoming very candid and revealing himself, saying, it's such a wonderful thing for me to feel that devotee on my shoulders, and that I'm defeated by them. The infinite has been defeated by the finite. And his mother, Nandikim Akarod Brahman Sreya Eva Mahodayam Yashodava Mahabhaga Papo Yasya Stanam Hari. No, Raghupati Upadai praising Nanda Maharaj for having the Param Brahman crawling in his courtyard as a toddler. So saying, what did he do? Just sort of saying, what did those cowherd boys do? They get, what did he do? He has the Param Brahma crawling in his courtyard as a toddler. And Pariket Maharaj saying, and Yashoda Va Mahabhaga, Yashoda, even of greater fortune, Krishna crawling on her and onto her lap and sucking her breast milk. Gopyadade Twai Krita Krishi Dhammatava Dhyate Dushashu Kalilanjana Sambramaksham. And Kunti Devi saying, what sort of mysterious, wonderful vision am I having, seeing that Krishna, as a naughty child, is running from his mother. She's chasing after him with a stick. And he's crying, and the kajal on his eyes, like we saw the children of Kusum Sarovar. There, I saw these little girls, you can see them in the picture there, the little school girls. They all have kajal, like eye makeup. They look like they're 6, 7, 8, something like that. So I asked Maheshwari, I'm saying, like, when do they start wearing eye makeup? She said, at birth. I went, oh. As I thought, oh, maybe you get to start at a... No, since birth, their eyes are being decorated like that. So that naughty Krishna, he's also got the beautiful black eye makeup on his lotus eyes, running from his mother, but Kunti's saying, but tears are pouring from his eyes in fear of his mother, and it's causing it to run on his face. But it's enhancing his beauty. It looks more beautiful. And she's saying, what kind of vision is this? And Krishna goes further. And he uses the word bartsan. And he said, but if my beloved is angry at me and chastising me, It's so sweet to my ear and heart melting that it steals my mind away from the reverential hymns of the Vedas. So whatever is in this world, this is the perverted reflection of the spiritual reality. It has its origin in that domain, but to use the cliche, you know, it's categorically different in substance. So Krishna is saying, we're told on the one hand, these are the, you know, qualities, undesirable qualities that we must overcome. Lust, kam, krodh, lobha, moha, matsarja, etc. Right? We have to transition out of that toward that plane. But it is not unidimensional or monotonous, emotionally monotonous. There's the full spectral range of emotions and different types of expression are there. We're told all about sharanagati, right? Surrender and submission. And then we're told, but in that plane, what is one of Srimati Radharani's known attributes is Bhamabhav, the mood of opposition. But this is free from any trace. This is already expressed by Mahaprabhu and Charitamrita and saying the love of the gopis, it has no traces of mundane sentiment, calm or otherwise. It's all for the pleasure of Krishna. So her so-called opposition is also to enhance the pleasure of Krishna. That's the beauty, an inconceivable beauty of that plane. So, Rosh, so-called loving anger, is for the pleasure of Krishna. So, Atmendriya Preeti, Atmendriya Preeti, Vanjadari, Bole Kam, Krishnendriya Preeti, Ichadari Premanam. What is self-centered, self-assertion, is calm. And Krishnendriya, Rishikena, Rishikesha Sevanam, what is done for the pleasure of Krishna, the senses of Krishna, that we're told, that is prem. And everything really is springing from there. But this world, we're told, is the perverted reflection of the supreme reality. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Hare Krishna.